This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
So on the one hand, we say we want to save the airline. Then we say we want wage increases and we want to secure jobs. But you damage the financials of the company while we're doing that. And those things don't work together.
That's South Africa's Minister of Public Enterprises warning that the strike against South African Airways could carry dire consequences. Details coming up also. Ethiopia is waiting for final results from yesterday's autonomy referendum that could yield a new state in the new ethnic Sidama region. And a 15-year-old girl from Cameroon has won the 2019 International Children's Peace Prize. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, an uncertain future faces South Africa's state-owned airline as talks of liquidation surface. South African Airways has been paralyzed by a week-long strike by two unions over salaries and job security. The airline says it's so bankrupt that it may not be able to pay this month's salaries. As Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, one expert says it may be time to close shop.
It's day 7 of the strike, but it looks far from over. The losses are mounting by an estimated $3 million per day. Martin Kingston, a board member for the airline, says SAA is quickly running out of options and the worst will happen without a cash injection.
Unless we are able to secure guarantees from National Treasury, and we're in discussions with them as you and I speak, then the board will have to recommend to government that actually it be placed in liquidation because we have no confidence that we can continue to trade responsibly. There is no money in the bank account to pay anybody.
The ailing airline has not made profit for years and has received over $1 billion in government bailouts in the last 3 years. Kingston says that to stay open, SAA is facing tough choices that include retrenching up to 900 workers and keeping salaries frozen. The unions, which are seeking 8% raises, are having none of it. Phakamile Hlubi Majola is the spokesperson of the National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa, NUMSA.
We are saying no, comrades! We refuse to back down. We want to put food on our tables. We will not be sacrificial lambs. You have declared war, and we are fighting back.
The Minister of Public Enterprises, Pravin Gordhan, warns of dire consequences if the strike does not end.
So on the one hand, we say we want to save the airline. Then we say we want wage increases, and we want to secure jobs. But you damage the financials of the company while we're doing that. And those things don't work together.
Aviation expert Putejo Mochapelo says it's already too late to save the airline.
There is no way that they're going to recover out of this. And I think maybe it's high time that we start talking to the people that are interested to buy this airline. It would be best if we privatize part of it. Why can't we try that? We can have shareholders to come and buy the stake on the airline and run it as a business that brings the money in the country.
Meanwhile, SAA says it has been able to resume all of its international flights and some domestic and regional flights. Nevertheless, Trade Union Solidarity has served the airline with court papers asking the Johannesburg High Court to place it under business rescue. This will put all its affairs in the hands of a business rescue practitioner to facilitate its rehabilitation from financial distress. Solidarity says it's either that or liquidation. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Ethiopia is waiting for a final results from yesterday's autonomy referendum that could yield a new state in the ethnic Sidama region. The vote is seen as a critical test in a nation that has made striking democratic changes over the past year, but also is struggling with ethnic tensions. Analysts say it could inspire other groups to push for autonomy and redraw boundaries in Africa's second most populous country. If approved, the new state would be given tax-raising authority and control over schools, police, health, and other services to the Sidamas, who would be in the majority. The Sidama push for autonomy triggered days of unrest in July that left dozens dead and prompted the government to place Ethiopia's southern region under the control of soldiers and federal police. A 15-year-old girl from Cameroon has won the 2019 International Children's Peace Prize. Davida Maloum was rewarded for her efforts in promoting children's rights and warning them against joining armed groups such as Boko Haram. Mokedwin Kenzeka visited schools where Maloum has been preaching peace and reports from Yaoundé.
Hundreds of children from schools in Yaoundé, glued to their TV screens, applauded Wednesday as Davida Maloum was given the International Children's Peace Prize for 2019 in The Hague on the occasion of Universal Children's Day. This is no small award. The other winner of the prize was 16-year-old Greta Thunberg, the climate activist from Sweden, who was unable to attend the ceremony but said in a statement that she is incredibly grateful and honored for this prize. Among those watching Maloum accept the award was a civic education teacher, Ntigang Umaru.
C'est grâce à Davida que les enfants ont cessé de consommer la drogue à l'école.
Umaru says thanks to Davida Maloum's association to Children for Peace, many young people in their schools and neighborhoods no longer consume drugs. He says after Davida Maloum's talks and sensitization caravans, the community was alert and the police now carry on regular controls to make sure drugs and alcohol are not sold around schools and to children. She says she is very proud of the 15-year-old and wishes her well. Maloum created Children for Peace in 2014 after she visited Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, where Boko Haram terrorism has killed more than 27,000 people and displaced 2 million others. She says she was horrified that children were the greatest victims of the war and started thinking of what she could do to help those who were joining Boko Haram either by force or out of ignorance.
I noticed that the rights of children, especially for girls, were violated. You see a girl of 5 years getting married to an old man of 60 years. You see boys, girls who are carriers of bombs. So I decided to create that association to stimulate the civic and voluntary engagement of children in the fight against violent extremism, to make them be peace builders in their community, to also make them to be change makers.
Children for Peace now has a network of 100 children across the 10 regions of Cameroon. She has organized inter-community children's peace camps, established peace clubs in mosques, and together with other children, made a children's declaration against violent extremism. Maloum says she believes everyone can make a difference in bringing peace to their societies.
My message to the world is that when the power of love will be greater than the love of power, man shall have another name, which is God. And that a youth, where you are as an individual, you can change the world and make a difference where you are going to.
Maloum says her main concern now is for peace to return to the restive English-speaking regions of Cameroon, where most schools have been closed for 3 years due to fighting between armed separatists and the military. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Burkina Faso says security forces fended off armed extremists using motorcycles and GPS devices to mount an attack on a security base in the country's north. 18 of the attackers and one police officer were killed yesterday at Arbindi in Soum provinces. The assault occurred in the increasingly deadly Sahel region that includes Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. Several Islamist groups, including Al-Qaeda and Islamic State, operate in the area and have sent entire communities fleeing. The United Nations has warned of a growing humanitarian crisis, with nearly 500,000 people displaced in Burkina Faso and many going hungry. The Burkina Faso army said it killed 32 terrorists last week in two operations in the north. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on The Voice of America. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Sixteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. An uncertain future faces South Africa's state-owned airline as talks of liquidation surface. Ethiopia is waiting for final results from yesterday's autonomy referendum that could yield a new state in the ethnic Sidama region. And a 15-year-old girl from Cameroon has won the 2019 International Children's Peace Prize. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The Committee to Protect Journalists, a global press freedom group, has named Maxence Milo, a Tanzanian journalist and founder of Jamii Forums, winner of this year's International Press Freedom Award. The forum, which is available in Tanzania, Kenya, and Uganda, is a platform where whistleblowing, breaking news, and discussions take place with the aim of promoting accountability and transparency. Milo has been arrested twice because of his work and has been to court over 100 times. He spoke to VOA's Salem Salomon in our studio in Washington and starts by describing how cyber laws are being used to stifle information and punish journalists.
Yes, under Section 16 of the Cybercrimes Act, anyone who publishes false information is subject to commit a crime. And you may think that you have posted something which you feel like it's true, or it's you can just put it as comedy. In the end, you end up being arrested for posting false information. And the person who can claim it wasn't false information is a minister of that ministry. And the minister is just a politician. It may be a story about him or about a colleague of that minister. And it's you are in the police's mercy to allow you, like, you are safe or not, until they tell you it's not false information. So the Section 16 of the Cybercrimes Act is being, I may say, kind of misused to challenge those critical voices. But it's, also we have Section 32 of the Cybercrimes Act. The first section may give you freedom. The second section may take your freedom. But the third one allows people like us who are processing information not to reveal the identities of our whistleblowers until the court tells the authorities what to do. But as for me, I was arrested without court order and the procedures were not followed. But again, for the past 3 years, I've been in court. So we also have Section 22 of the Cybercrimes Act, which is being used by the police to demand for user data. But sometimes, as for a journalist, if they do not read these laws, you can't find that they still have give you freedom under Section 39, that you are not liable to reveal your sources until some procedures are followed.
But you have to go through a court system.
You have to go, yes, you have to go through the court process.
Do you believe that you'll be able to practice journalism in Tanzania?
Yes, we still do that, even though there are lots of restrictions, there are lots of laws. You need to understand how to navigate through these kinds of tough times. I think I've read almost all laws, around 13 of them, which are within the industry, and you find some flaws or some sections that do safeguard you. But the problem is, until you're safe, it's when the court decides like you're free and the allegations against you were not genuine. But again, it's a few people who can accept appearing before the court over 100 times, appearing with the court to the court every week, and being intimidated, lots of calls from authorities, the police and the other authorities, and a few journalists who can access this kind of intimidation. And I sometimes understand why some people tend not to practice journalism, even though they are journalists. I spoke about the 13 different laws, but yeah. Also the money laundering can be used against any journalist. We have our colleague, Eric Kabendera, who is facing charges in court. I don't want to get into details because it's still a case which is pending in court. And also that's why I didn't talk much about my cases, the two cases which are pending in court. But what I want to say that any law can be used against critical voices, against journalists, especially those who are doing investigative journalism. So it comes at a huge price.
That was Tanzanian journalist Maxence Milo speaking with VOA Salem Salamone. A diplomatic tussle has erupted after Zimbabwe allegedly divulged only a small portion of the aid that China has provided this year. Adigando details the surprising conflict between donor and recipient.
The Chinese government has accused Zimbabwe of heavily understating its financial assistance to the Southern African nation. Zimbabwe Finance Minister Mthuli Ncube said in a budget statement last week that the country received US $194 million from bilateral donors between January and September, with most of the money coming from Western countries. Ncube said Beijing provided US $3.6 million, a paltry sum considering China's status as Zimbabwe's always-the friend. Clearly feeling slighted, China issued a statement saying it wished government agencies will make comprehensive assessments and actually reflect its actual situation. China insists it actually provided US $136.8 million for January through September, which doesn't include donations to vulnerable groups. Economic analyst Gift Mgano questioned the newest motive in understating so much.
It's an embarrassment and disappointment because you would note that if you understate, when people are looking at it, they see it as a clear intention of trying to avoid transparency and accountability, because a budget is a serious thing. That's where you need to account to the public. Then to understate those numbers by over $100 million is unacceptable.
The finance ministry says consultations are underway to establish a common accounting position. China insists development support should include cash aid, such as humanitarian assistance for disaster relief, material aid such as donations of rice and medical and agricultural equipment, and funds for major bilateral cooperation projects. The dispute also raised questions about what the Chinese are getting in exchange for the funds. It looks sinister to National Council member Swithan Chiworodza of the opposition Movement for Democratic Change.
What we then can have as conjecture there is that we've noticed on social media that ZANU-PF runs with the myth that it has cut ties with China. Well, all that is false. That is just mumbo jumbo. You have a situation now where we almost think that Zimbabwe is a satellite state of China, judging from the figures and the insistence by the Chinese embassy for the incorrect statement to be corrected.
Chiworodza insists that since the days of deposed former President Robert Mugabe, China's tentacles have been gripping the country's natural resources, taking control of large swaths of land in exchange for benefits to the ruling ZANU-PF party.
The continued relations with China seem to suggest that the Chinese are only serving a few people in ZANU-PF and not the country. So I should say that the country is currently being mortgaged.
Economic analyst Mgano sees the alleged understatement as detrimental to government's attempts to lure foreign direct investment, saying the finance ministry has a track record of obscuring its dealings.
I think for me, it's a disease of a lack of transparency on the part of Ministry of Finance. And there's a lot of things which have been happening in there. So the same spirit where they don't want the public to know how much they got from the Chinese, that money would have been diverted. There's a lot of shrouding around the subject. But as the public, we become the judges and say, I think there was ulterior motive or incompetence.
Mugano says there's a risk that some development partners may also withhold funding for critical programs, and that delays in taking remedial action against violations is the unintended effect of propagating corrupt tendencies in the public service. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
The Rwandan government says the recent visits of Russian tennis star Maria Sharapova and other sports celebrities have helped boost overall tourism numbers by 8%. Eugene Wimana reports from Kigali, Rwanda.
That is the silverback gorilla moving before Maria Sharapova, a tennis superstar who is looking at gorillas and other wildlife in Guanas Volcanoes National Park. Sharapova didn't talk to the media, but she tweeted, "We are falling in love with your country, truly." Early morning treks to locate the gorillas, getting caught in a rainforest downpour, witnessing a silverback, the big daddy of all big daddies, walk right past ours without a care in the world, thankfully so special. Later on, Sharapova met with Uganda's President Paul Kagame. Her visit comes after a similar one last month by Arsenal football star David Luiz.
The moment for me I was enjoying a lot, and this program of stability I think is going to continue to improve, and I hope in 5 years, or I hope to come back here before, but I hope we can in 5 years can continue to be a fantastic program and help the community, help everybody here, and help the flores, help the jungle, help the gorillas, help everybody to enjoy a lot. So this is my dream, and this I think is the goal of the country.
Northern Uganda, the home of endangered gorillas, have welcomed many sports stars this year. They include Louis van Gaal, the former Manchester United coach, and the Arsenal legend and the former England captain Tony Adams. After visiting gorillas, they all sound satisfied, which is the aim of the Ugandan government. This is Tony Adams.
Well, it's absolutely fantastic. It's twice now I've been on treks to see the gorillas. And it's just a fantastic experience to be this close away from a big silverback.
When these footballers say it is fantastic, it means dollars for Uganda. In May last year, Rwanda inked a massive advertising deal with the Arsenal Football Club, a 3-year deal worth £30 million. With this agreement, the English football club has been advertising Visit Rwanda on the players' sleeves. The Rwandan government says this has helped lift overall tourism numbers by 8%. Rwanda Development Board says the number of tourists from England alone has climbed by 5% compared to the previous period. According to these statistics, Rwandans will keep seeing football stars as the strategy is working. I'm Eugene Wimana in Kigali, Rwanda.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Sidrak Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
On December 5th, Border Crossings will bring you the greatest songs inspired by the soul genre. You'll hear smash hits from Three Dog Night, Holland Oates, and George Michael. If you like these tracks, you'll love our Soul Inspirations theme, December 5th on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.